Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. Herbert Grönemeyer is a very famous man you have likely never heard of. He's Germany's biggest music star and has sold over 18 million records. His ascent to fame began in the early 1980s when Grönemeyer starred in the movie Das Boot, which tells the story of a German submarine during World War II. A few years after the release of Das Boot, Grönemeyer followed his movie success with a wildly popular album called 4630 Bochum. His musical career has spanned over three decades. He has penned some of the most iconic German songs. He has scored movies and starred in several films. And he joins us today in the studio to talk about his career, his songs, and his latest English language album entitled I Walk. He's currently on a tour of the U.S. He played the Keswick Theater last night. Herbert Grönemeyer, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks.
Now, I saw your show at the Keswick Theater last night, which is a great venue, but it is a small venue. And when I watch videos of your shows in Germany, we're talking stadiums, we're talking huge crowds. And last night, you looked like you were having the time of your life. Do you enjoy the smaller venues?
I think smaller venues are actually more delicate. You have to be more defined. I think stadiums, you're more like an elephant. You really have to put a lot of energy across. But in a small venues, it's very private, very intimate. And for a musician, actually, it's very, very nice. And I think it's a great venue, and it's normal that because nobody knows us over here, we're just starting. And it was a great evening, and the crowd was very, very nice.
And is it strange for you to be in a place where people don't know who you are? If you're walking around in Germany, you can't go anywhere without people tugging on your sleeves, I would imagine.
Well, that's exactly the nice thing about it. I think we are around for 30 years now, also as a band. And to play in front of people and native Germans or people that come moved over here from Germany bring their American partners to show, and you have to convince them because they had to come, and so that makes it really interesting. So you have to look at their faces and see whether you get them, and that's the whole idea why we're here. We start from scratch, and that's the beauty of it. We really it's very, very important for our own brains to refresh it, to see where are we. And it's really a dream come true for all of us to play in America.
So is the question kind of, can we make people fall in love with us all over again?
Exactly. It's every evening you flirt with the audience and try to, fall in love maybe a lot. But yeah, if they start falling in love, would be nice.
Do you find it harder for you to connect with is there a language barrier? Obviously, your English is perfect, but is there any kind of barrier? Do your jokes sometimes not translate? Is it difficult to connect with an audience in a different country?
No, I must say that as far as we get it from this tour, and we played two concerts in March in Chicago and New York, I think the Americans are very, very open-minded. They really come. They want to have fun. They want to enjoy. They're not as skeptic in a way like the Germans are. So I think you enter a room where the atmosphere is very, very open and very refreshing and kind. And they want to listen to the music. And I think that makes it really beautiful to play here.
And what did your band say? Was it your idea to come over here, or whose idea was this?
No, it was from all of us. I think my band, we're together for 30 years, and they grew up in the south of Germany, so where all the American soldiers are based. And they earned their money in the beginning of their musical career in playing for GIs and making music in the clubs, and so all with this kind of funk and soul music. And to play America was always on the list, you know. And ultimately, now I live in England now since 14 years, and ultimately, we thought, if we don't do it now, we never do it. And the time is right; it feels right. And I didn't have to encourage them. We all are very, very excited to be here.
Is it unusual? You've been together for so long as a band. It is unusual.
Yeah, it's a tricky. It's like having a marriage. Yeah, we went through tough times in the beginning because I was so unsuccessful. They didn't want to make a band with me. They've been already professionals. I was a kind of a student, always being a musician. But when I came to the studio, they said, "No, pay us as professionals. I think you never make it." And so I said, "I will convince you that I'll make it." So I was very encouraged to go on. I'm very stubborn German. So, and now, and so ultimately, I made them kind of loving me, and so now we're together, and we're a great band. I think the bass player and the drummer plays together nearly played together since I think nearly 40 years now, and they're really tight and very, very good. And now it's a lot of fun. We're all together.
Now, you You mentioned, you know, how you loved music in the beginning. You were not all that successful. You were, however, very successful as an actor. You were in Das Boot. Your name recognition soared. Why did you pick music over acting, ultimately?
Well, I was always a musician. I started as a piano player in a theater when I was 17. And when the boat was casted, they looked for young actors. And I was already there. In my hometown, there was a very famous theater in Germany. And so they put me on stage when I was 20. So ultimately, they looked for the movie for young actors. So, and then people recognized my name, and then they listened to my music and said, he looks very kind in the movie, but his music is terrible and his lyrics are terrible. So they didn't like me. But I was always a musician. And so that's why I feel a little bit more home there. I still did acting, and I did a movie with Burt Lancaster. I think it was his last movie with the Fathers and Sons. But I think I'm much better on stage, I think, than in a movie.
And there was never that temptation to be done with the music?
No, that's like kissing. I think you never stop doing that. No, it's like you always want to die on stage. I think that's the dream, you know. Even if only one person shows up, it's the only thing is you have to be at least a little bit less on stage than in the audience. But until then, you always play make music. You can't stop that. It's like having a shower.
We're talking with Herbert Grönemeyer. He is Germany's best-selling musical artist. He's also an actor, and he's currently on U.S. tour. He has a new album in English language, this time called I Walk. And I want to listen to one of the songs, which you also performed last night from your new album. It's called Mensch. And I do want to say that Mensch in German simply means human. It's not the Yiddish word, which means Mensch is a good guy, is a good human. In German, Mensch is just the human being. And this is a song that you performed and also features a guest appearance by Bono. So let's listen to Mensch.
Every second has a reason as the time slides away, changing with the season and just following the race. No need to be final, I'll put my thoughts on hold. Daydream set the water as the tide ebbs and flows.
And it's okay, I'll take it day by day. This is summertime, there's nothing on my mind. And a man's called man, cause we forgive and understand. We forget and we deny, we lose and still we try.
Tell me a bit about the genesis of this song. This was a bad time in your life.
Yeah, I had a kind of a catastrophe in 98. My brother and my wife died in the same week. But I'm a very optimistic person, and I love people. And my father was a great, had a lot of friendships with people for over 50 years, and a lot of friends. And he always told me, the only thing in life is having friends. That's what counts. No money, no success. That's what lasts in the end. And so in this bad time, in those bad days, it proved right. My friends really carried me through these dark days. And I wanted to thank them in a way, and I wanted to thank life that this belief in people actually proved right, and that's what the song is all about. And if something like that happens, you value life with it. You see it with different eyes, and ultimately, I sing. It's wonderful to be in this movie, being in this life, and the only pity is that this very lovely person is not there anymore. But still, if I would go, I would also want my partner to be happy in life again. So that's it's in a way praising friendships and life.
And praising, I guess, man's ability to rise up again, to keep going.
Yes, exactly. I think loss is part of all of our lives, whatever that means. We all have to go through that. It's part. And to learn to deal with that and to understand that we have to go ourselves, but we go through a lot of losses in life. So, but that also makes the beauty and the colorful sides of life so valuable, and we have to learn to appreciate that. And this song was exactly about that. Mm.
And your daughter said to you after the death of your wife, don't stop singing. Had you ever considered stop That you would stop the music?
No, it was very interesting. When I told my two kids that what happened, I think my son was very upset and cried, and my daughter was very quiet. And just it really, the first line was that you don't stop singing. The second line was, there's no other woman coming to the house. And for them, seeing me singing was always, I think, they grew up with that, seeing me on stage. And I think it represents for them this the joy of life, the energy of life. And that's why I went, no, I never, I wasn't sure whether I could write again. I think that was my biggest fear. But I was pretty sure that I would have to and will go on making music and singing. So I went quite soon, after a year, I went back on stage to just give them the feeling life goes on. And for them, that was very, very important to see the father back in his world and yeah.
Yeah, and the song Mensch we just heard, it became a symbol for recovery after Germany went through a terrible time with floods. Talk a bit about that time and what happened, and people seem to really connect to that song.
Yeah, because it was a very interesting coincidence, because there's this one line that talking about the tides and the floods going away, and in those days, a little bit like now in Boulder and in Colorado, or we had this amazing flooding that whole Leipzig and the east of Germany was underwater. And for the first time after unification, the Westerners went to the east and helped the people in the east to deal with this catastrophe. And suddenly this song became also part again of this human support in a tragic situation. And so that worked out as well. And it showed again that friendship is the only way forward.
And how did you come to collaborate with Bono?
Well, I know Bono since the mid 2005, 2006, because we were working together on a campaign called Make Poverty History. That's it's a campaign that tries to remind the G8 states that made the promise in 2000 to halve extreme poverty till 2015. And we also just campaigning to keep the goals up, to keep them at bay and control them. And we went together to the G8 meeting in Edinburgh in Rostock, and he was by accident, he was in Berlin, and he came to the studio and sat on the sofa and had a cup of tea and listened suddenly to the album. And we were once he's sitting, he's really focused, and he's a lovely person, very humble and decent guy. And he listened to songs and said, "Why don't you send me some songs of the album? And I might hum something or sing a harmony, and you can throw it away if you want." And so we sent him three songs, and funny enough, he came back with this song, with Mensch, and sang it completely. And said, "You can deal with it, you can make a duet with it." And so we did this together, and then we recorded a show for PBS as well, and he was starring there as well, playing with me in this concert.
And he sings it in German on occasion.
Yes, yes.
We're talking with Herbert Grönemeyer. He is a German musician. He is currently on a U.S. tour promoting his new English language album entitled I Walk. You're listening to Radio Times. We'll be right back after a short break.
AT&T Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, a sort of romantic comedy. An imaginary biography of comedy legend Gilda Radner, Bunny Bunny is a time capsule of Gilda's life and career. From her big break on Saturday Night Live, Bunny Bunny presents Gilda Radner in all her glory, sarcastic, charming, and always funny. Tickets and information at 1812productions.org.
Before Cheap Trick conquered their home turf, they were big in Japan.
We finally landed in Tokyo, and there was like about 5,000 people on top of the roof of the terminal screaming and yelling. We didn't know they were for us. We thought there was somebody famous on the plane.
Rick Nielsen and his Cheap Trick bandmates relive live at Budokan this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, in South Florida, a group of amputee veterans is turning into an army of scuba divers to stop others from overfishing.
It's not just about shark conservation anymore. It's about preservation, ocean conservation.
That story next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking with German musician and superstar Herbert Grönemeyer. He is in the U.S. on tour promoting his new English language album, I Walk. He played the Keswick Theater last night and is joining us in the studio today. Herbert, you mentioned you were a pianist, you were a musician in your teens already. What were your early musical influences? What did you listen to as a teen?
Well, I listened a lot to, the Beatles, the Stones, Randy Newman, Cohen, Dylan, The Doors, Jimi Hendrix, McLaughlin, Tower of Power, I think, kind of rock jazz, but a lot of singer-songwriters as well. But I think Randy Newman is one of my biggest influences, I must say. I discovered him in the Netherlands. In Germany, nobody knew him, but in the early 70s, he was known already in the Netherlands. And I think he's one of my biggest influences. And The Doors, I like Jim Morrison. And
why did you decide to sing in German?
Well, I've seen myself always like a singer. I'm not even singer because I'm like a musician, like a guitar player, like a trumpet player. I'm a singer. So and ultimately, my first album, I've sung songs of other people. So they gave me the album. I went in the studio and sung it on tape. And then I realized if I want to sing properly in German, I have to write the lyrics myself. And that's how I started writing my lyrics. And in Germany, I think if you come from the country, you have to sing in your mother tongue. I think that's the thing to start with. But when I was young, I was always singing in English. Even when I wasn't even speaking English, I was singing in English. So I listened on the radio and wrote the lyrics down the way I understood them.
And we all did that.
Yeah, and had no clue. But I even made performances.
Never
like
knew
that.
What
I was,
they said.
Yeah, I even played a folk festival in England when I was 16, playing Dylan songs and Donovan and Leonard Cohen, even without the lyrics, and people liked it. So but I liked to sing in English. But ultimately, in the end, I started writing my own lyrics in German. And the German language is an interesting language. It's very guttural, very percussive. I think English language is for a singer much nicer to sing, smoother and more elegant.
And nobody at that time, I grew up in Germany as well, and nobody was singing in German. Nobody was doing it. Was there, do you think, there was a reluctance to be an artist who was a German language artist?
I think with our history, with the Nazis, with the fascists, I think they used the German language so strongly for propaganda that we've been very hesitant to sing in German. I think it took us a long time. I think when all the other cultures, like the English, the French, the Americans, they all had their own development, went on with their culture. But we had a break. We had really like a break, and we started singing German in a way in the late 70s, early 80s. It started a little bit very political, very clear, very engineered. This is not Nazi Germany. So we had a big break there, and that's why I think we developed very late.
There was a thing called the Neue Deutsche Welle.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever consider yourself part of that? It was different, for sure. But did that influence you in any way? Did it?
Yeah, they made fun of the German language. I think that was very refreshing. I think we had this kind of crowd rock in the 70s, like Kraftwerk, electronic music, German engineered music. Then we had the Neue Welle that was like new wave, but very funny German lyrics. And then came in the 80s, actually, that's where I'm from. Came the people that tried for the first time to write kind of, singer-songwriter, good lyrics without being complete, as well political, but on top of that as well, love songs and about their own lives and thoughts and feelings. So that was, I think it started in the 80s, actually.
Now, you published, you had several albums before the one that became a super hit. The first ones didn't go anywhere. So what changed? Did something change with you as a performer? Did something change in your luck? What was it?
Well, the thing was that I made four albums and was completely unsuccessful. And everybody, even my band and everybody around said, stop it. And your lyrics are terrible. I wrote songs about the nuclear, neutron bomb and about brutality in the cinema and about the currywurst and whatever. Everything that came to my mind, and people thought he's crazy. And ultimately, I made this album, Bochum. And Bochum, what is it? It's like, like Baltimore, or it's like a mining. It's a working-class mining town in Germany. And everybody said, now you do this album entitled with your hometown, and nobody will buy that in a 20 miles radius. And so, but it was the first album I produced myself. So I could sing the way I sing. And the first single was called Männer, and I remember that the radio station didn't play it because they couldn't understand a word. And for Germans not to understand a word is impossible. You know, we are engineers, we want to be precise, and everything has to be handcrafted and precise. So the radio station refused to play that song because they say, we can't understand that guy. But I loved it because it I could bring across my feelings rather than I'm not telling a poem. I'm singing, so the emotion has to come across.
I do want to listen to Männer, but not just yet. Before we get to that, I wanted to listen to the song you just described before then, which is called Bochum, which is about your hometown. So let's listen to that for a moment.
Du bist keine Schönheit. Vor Arbeit ganz grau. Lieb dich ohne Schminke, bist ne ehrliche Haut, leider total verbaut, aber gerade das macht dich aus. Du hast einen Pulsschlag aus Stahl, man hört ihn laut in der Nacht. Bist einfach zu bescheiden. Dein Grubengold hat uns wieder hochgeholt. Du Blume im Revier. Bochum, ich komm aus dir. Bochum, ich häng an dir. Glück auf, Bochum. Du bist keine Weltstadt.
That is Herbert Grönemeyer's song, Bochum. And some of the lyrics, I just jotted it down a little bit. It's an ode, a hymn for your hometown. And you sing, you're not a beauty, you're gray from all the work you've done. You love yourself without makeup. You're an honest soul. Your pulse beat is in steel. You can hear it in the night. You are always too modest. So it is really a song for the working man, for a city which, to me, you know, it could become a hymn for Philadelphia too, for a city that is always eternally struggling, but the people in it love it so dearly.
Yeah, it's a straightforward town. I think there's no makeup, no bullshit. It's straight into your face.
You saw my face.
It's very straightforward, very honest, and life is too short with it to cover it up with every foam or make it. It has to be direct, and people are also even still till today. It's the place where I go there. They talk to me in a very straightforward way, and a very, very good humor. Was mixed a little bit with Polish people coming to show the Germans how to mine. So they also are very humorous and can make fun of themselves. So it's very unique for Germany. Germans don't make fun of themselves. And yeah, I like it, but they very modest as well, yes.
And do you feel people connected with you as an artist around this album? And was it that same thing? Because you as an artist seem very straightforward in those songs. It's, here am I, this is me. Do you think that's something that appealed to people?
Well, it's always hard to analyze yourself what made the people listening to your music. But I think, yeah, I'm trying to be... I think the only way I can write my lyrics is to talk about myself, not in terms that I open up my intimate things, but I want to talk about things clearly and as straightforward as possible, and maybe that touches the people, and they say that I can rely to that because I feel the same, yeah.
And when you listen to some of your oldest songs now from your repertoire, how do you feel about them? Is it fun? Do you sometimes think, oh?
Well, this is very, well, this is like 30 years ago, so it's very 80s, but I try to sing very high. I think that I remember because I thought that's like Police, like Sting was singing very high, so I thought this shows a very good energy. Yeah, it's nice. I think it's still there. I think it's still that warmth there. That's fine. But it throws you back 30 years in your life. But we still play that song. And so, no, it's quite nice. And you listen to the production. That's, you know, you also listen very technically. What did you do with the synthesizer, playing the brass? And so these things. But it's nice.
Do you, Are there songs that you can't stand from your older repertoire that people ask you to play and you think, oh, not that song?
Yeah, we like the song Mena, I think. That's one of the songs. We also make fun of that song. It's a big hit, but it's talking about attitudes of men. And we did a video on the last tour where I'm actually as a woman, dressed as a woman on the video. Yeah, you have to be also... You should not become your own caricature. So you also have to have fun, make fun about yourself, and then you can play all the old songs. Because, as myself, if I go to a concert, I'm also happy to hear one of the classics.
Yeah, let's listen to that song "Männer," which is about men, and that is also from the 80s and from that same album. So let's have a listen.
Männer nehmen in den Arm, Männer geben Geborgenheit. Männer weinen heimlich, Männer brauchen viel Zärtlichkeit. Und Männer sind so Verletzte. Männer sind auf dieser Welt einfach unersetzlich. Männer kaufen Frauen, Männer stehen ständig unter Strom. Männer baggern wie Blöde.
That is Herbert Grönemeyer's song "Männer" from his 1984 album Bochum. And Herbert, the lyrics are, and I listened to this song as a teenager and I was not sure back then if you were serious or not serious. I wasn't quite sure, so I will ask you about that. But the lyrics go a little bit like, men give hugs, they cry in secret, they need tenderness, they are easily hurt, but they play like they are tough guys, they are irreplaceable in this world, they are electrified, they hit on women like idiots, they lie on the phone, they are always ready, they have a tough time, but they take it easy, they are hard on the outside and soft on the inside. So it was kind of a question mark back then, and I thought, is he serious? Is he being ironic? So were you?
No, I think it's definitely ironic. I think it's this mix. I think if you want to bring things across, and that's what I also like about England, you have to be kind of ironic and self-ironic. But people took it, again, very seriously. But also there's this one line, but there's in the German language, if you're blue, you're drunk.
You're drunk.
And also you dress a man as a child in blue, mm-hmm. and a girl in pink. And so I also say they're already as a baby blue. So it's this double meaning. They're already drunk when they come onto this planet. So yeah, it's ironic. But
I think at the time, you know, women's lib was huge, and I think there was also a secret longing maybe for a manly man. And the song does describe a manly man.
Yeah, it was this time where men started to become very understanding and this
wear babies.
Yeah,
and
yeah, exactly. And I thought this becomes a bit boring now. I think it was a bit trying to figure out that men. The nice thing is that men are different to women, and the two together make it whole. So they should stick to their manly attitudes rather than becoming to pretend that they understand where they don't understand anything.
And what were some of the reactions you got to that song from your feminist friends, from your man friends?
No, funny enough, I had in the 80s, I had that with my songs, I had the image to be the great women understander. So I don't know why that became and why that was. But the reaction was actually very positive. But because I kept it on the edge, I kept it balanced.
And what did your wife say about the song?
My wife was never... My wife was not so keen on my music anyway, so... And it took a long time. She came more from the punk side of life. And for her, I think I was too melodious and charming. And took quite like 15 years down the line in our relationship where she started thinking, oh, now he becomes a little bit better. She wasn't the greatest fan of my music.
And talk about the way you said German is guttural, but I think it's also you make it even more so in your delivery. You have a very pronounced way of speaking and of pushing words out. Has that always been part of your signature?
Well, I try to get the most out of the language because it has a lot of guttural attacks. I think it's like a percussion instrument. And I even look for the words that have double consonants.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I look for them because they're really like a taka-taka-taka-taka-taka. So I use that because that's the only way forward to make this language special.
And were you trained classically as a singer?
No, never. I always sing like that. Since I was 13, I had never a voice break. I was always singing like that. And my grandmother was an opera singer. And well, not opera singer, but she had training as an opera singer. And she was always saying, you ruined your voice in the way you sing. But I like singing. I'm highly under steam, and I have to sing. Otherwise, I would be a crazy and drive people nuts because I would be getting on the nerves. But because I'm singing, it's letting steam out. I love it. I love to sing.
How do you care for your voice to make sure you can perform night after night? What do you do?
Normally, I don't talk in the morning.
Okay. I'm glad you are talking today.
Actually, it's the first time now before this tour because I went to a lady to learn to calm down the voice after concert,
mm-hmm.
like a sportsman to run out and after a game. So I have a little training there now. I try this on this tour, and it helps quite nicely. That's what I do. But apart from that, I when I'm on tour, I don't talk a lot, and I just keep calm. But the moment you're on stage and the adrenaline kicks in, that's wonderful. And you see the faces of the people and see their eyes, and then you see the reactions when what you can cause with your music. I think it's the most beautiful thing you can have in life, actually.
And you're a very physical performer. You're up there, you're jumping around. How do you keep in shape to do all that?
Thank you for being in shape. No, that comes. Well, I was always very sportive and do my training, but it comes naturally. I can't stand still. I once spoke to Tina Turner, and she had made on the last tour. She had this set of kind of an unplugged set. And I said to her, that's great, you can do this for the next 20, 30 years. She said, no, I can't do that. This is standing still. It drives me nuts. I have to do the pony. She said this, you know, this pony mm-hmm. dancing thing. Without dancing, you can't sing. And that's typically, and I feel the same. You have to run around to have fun and let the voice go.
Do you dance when you're not singing? Do you like dancing?
Yes. yes. There was a song actually in Germany, Grimm, I Can't Dance, in the 80s because people thought I'm a very stiff on stage, but I was very nervous in those days. But I like dancing, yes.
So what do you do before a performance? How do you typically get ready?
I get a massage before a show, and then I start my voice training, and then I calm down and just have a half an hour of quietness and eat rice with chicken, and then I still go on stage, and that's it.
That's it. We're talking with Herbert Grönemeyer. He is one of Germany's biggest musical stars. He is also Germany's best-selling musician, and he's currently on a tour of the U.S. He's promoting an English-language album, which is called I Walk. Earlier on, we heard a song from that album, which is called Mensch, where Herbert performs with Bono. And we'll talk more. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that number is 1-888-477-9499. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
The Elizabeth House supports WHYY and announces the first annual Workforce Opportunities Conference, Wednesday, September 25th at the Chase Center on the Riverfront in Wilmington. The conference links those searching for traditional employment, contract work, small business ventures, and volunteer opportunities with business and government employers, staffing agencies, and educational institutions. Sponsored in part by the Company Corporation. To register online, events.theelizabethhouse.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Deborah Spar, president of Barnard College and author of Wonder Women, Sex, Power, and the Quest for Perfection. Spar was born in 1963, the second generation of women after the feminist movement. But, she says,
somewhere along the line, the message of feminism got watered down and misinterpreted.
Deborah Spar on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
In his new book, Our Political Nature, evolutionary anthropologist Avi Tushman explains what he calls the hidden roots of political convictions. He says political orientation is based on personality and evolutionary forces rather than intellect, upbringing, or even what we read in the news. On the next Voices in the Family, we'll talk about the hidden roots of our deeply held values. Today at noon here on WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain, and we're talking with German musician Herbert Grönemeyer, who is currently on a U.S. tour with his band. They've been together for 30 years. They have been playing music for 30 years. This language, this album is in English, and it's called I Walk. And Herbert, is it, now that you've been writing more in English, is it hard to write in German because our words... I'm German too, so our words sometimes are so long and the sentences get so cumbersome.
No, I think it's what you learn from, I live in England now for 14 years, and what's nice about the attitude of the Anglo-Saxon culture is you can take things easier and you can be more relaxed about it. I think as a German, you have the tendency to put too much sense in one line. And you learn in being in an Anglo-Saxon culture that take it easy, calm down, stay a bit vague if you want, and then be precise again. So I think it's very relaxing for a German to live in England.
And what has the reaction been of your German fans to your antics of coming over here and of doing more stuff in English?
Yeah, I think it's always the thing that I think it's like for the Canadians, if you're French Canadian and sing in English, I think it's always this thing, people want to keep you in their territories. But I'm responsible to look out for my own destiny and own fun in a way, and I'm responsible to find new challenges and new goals. And I think it's it's a great opportunity to be here. And the concert so far really going so well. And it's what a very nice experience. And I'm not employed by my fans. I really value them. And I'm very, very happy what we achieved. But on the other hand, I think I have to go forward. And I have another 40 years to go. And I want to have fun. And this is part of it, to conquer again, start from scratch and try to conquer one or the other person that might like the music we make. And then that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Could you see yourself going, I don't know how much acting you've done in recent years, could you see yourself pursuing that in a...
Yeah, I would definitely like to do that as well. I think I had a break in this because of my wife who was very ill, and had to look after my kids for a long time. So, and what I started now, I wrote two scores. I started writing film scores. I wrote a score for the movie The American with George Clooney, and just finished one called for A Most Wanted Man with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Willem Dafoe. So I approach a little bit that area again, and with writing film scores. But I would love to act as well. Yes, I think my face is now ready with all the wrinkles, and so I think I would maybe can start it again.
When you're an artist with longevity, we talked about that a little bit earlier, you look back over a long body of work. Is it always the same you? Is there sometimes a moment when you think, who is that guy?
Yeah, definitely. I think if I look back and see footage from my it's not me. If you look at yourself in earlier days, in younger days, not because I'm younger then, but you look at yourself even like a stranger. It's very, first of all, you don't like to see yourself. That's one thing. On the other hand, you feel that's not, you really watch that person like somebody else and think, what is he doing? And then after a while you realize, oh, that's me. No, it's very peculiar if you have to look at yourself and listening to what you've done in the early times. No, it's a very odd game, being so much in a public eye and also being filmed and photographed and have so much proof of your past. And sometimes it's odd, yes.
Mm. You are somebody who's always kept it real, as we say, where you know there hasn't been any big scandals. There has been a long relationship, a happy marriage. You've always led a kind of a quiet life on many levels. Was that a choice to stay a good person, to sum it up?
Well, it's to be a good person, I'm as good as I can be, let's say that. But on the other hand, I thought it's very important to have some privacy with all this bubble and in this public eye. I think you have to be careful. Also, you have to shelter your family. And so what I tried all these days, stay out of any newspapers and stuff, and because that's your life is already so much in public that you have to be very, very careful that you, your children or your wife, it's my responsibility to keep them safe. And on the other hand, it's also a way of grounding, I think, because you really, the tendency, and I had that as well, you think you're fabulous, and with all these success and money that comes in, it's a little bit like a balloon. You always have to tie down on the earth again. It's really a big battle, and in that sense, I tried over the years to keep it controlled. And now I even made it so far that there's a law in Germany that they're not allowed, because I kept so long out of with my private world, out of the public eye, that there's a law that they're not allowed to write me anymore. I made that over the years. That's quite interesting.
You mentioned your wife earlier and your marriage, and your wife died over 10 years ago now. And I was touched and maybe a bit surprised how many times you mentioned her last night in your show. And is it that feeling that she's always with you? And so many of the songs connect to your life with her?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you see, I'm in the mid-50s, but I spent 20 years with her. And so she's definitely a very strong part, but also in a positive way. I think that's what grief is all also about. It's not always about being sad. It's actually valuing, being in a way quite very, very grateful that this person was and is still in your life. I think that's the beauty of grief. It's not that we connect too quickly grief and sadness together. If you grieve, or we think about somebody, and that's wonderful. And if that was a wonderful person, it's great to have that in your brain, and you can carry that around for the rest of your life, and that's nice.
Let's get Peter to join us. He is in Mantua Township. Hi, Peter. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you for taking my call. Good morning.
Good morning.
Guten Morgen, wie geht's, Herr Grönemeyer?
Es geht mir gut, all good, thank you.
I promised the producer we would not speak German.
It's better to talk to you. We continue in English, the NSA may listen,
So. Yeah.
My question for you is this. I live here for many, many years. I grew up with you guys. With you guys, I mean Klaus Lage, you, Wolfgang Niedeck, and all these great songwriters in German, and over here you're virtually unknown. Now you make that big jump over across the ocean, and I appreciate that very much. Why do you think, from my perspective anyways, is there so little attempt of the great German rock musicians to become more internationally known? Is it the language? Is it just no interest in that? I do not know if you can answer that question, but what would your take be? And I can take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Peter, for calling in.
No, I think it's the barrier of singing German. I think that's definitely a thing. And on the other hand, it's a big step to take, I think. In not that I'm so courageous, but I think a lot of, and you can be very comfortable in the. It's a great comfort zone to be in Germany, because you have a big market, and that's exactly why I chose to step out to step out of the comfort zone, because Germany is a big market, and then you become very kind of everything is sorted, and it's. I think the nice thing about rock and roll is you have always to find new challenges, and that's what I'm doing, and that's my goal in life.
How did you decide to move away from Germany to move to London?
Well, one thing is that I work in England because of the big. I think the funny thing about England is that the biggest export in England is whiskey, the second one is Formula One, and the third is rock and roll. So the market and the whole studio scene is big, very, very big. And that was, I work in England since the 80s. And then my wife is from the north of Germany, and she always was nervous that it comes out in the media that she's ill, and she always wanted to escape. So ultimately we decided then, and she always wanted to go to England. She was very, very happy coming to England. And if you say to an in England, it's a little bit the same like in America, you're a musician. They love it. They think it's great. It's really, if you say that in Germany, people say, And what's your real profession? I'm also working as a doctor. In England, to be a musician is if a son says to the father, I want to become a drummer, they say, yeah, great. If you say that in Germany, they say, oh, God.
Yeah, go to school first.
Go to school first and start something serious. No, and so that was the reason. And the good thing was that I actually stayed there. In the beginning, I thought when it all happened quite quickly when we moved there with my wife, and I thought maybe I go back. But actually, I stayed in England, and that was a great decision.
Do you miss Germany? Do you feel to be a German still?
No, I think once you step out of Germany, it's like you did. I think you become even more German because you become even more sentimental. But on the other hand, you're very happy that you went on. And through a lot of things, I'm also quite often in Berlin, back in Berlin now, because my co-producer Alex Silva, he fell in love with a German girl while we've been doing a theater play in Germany. So he lives in Berlin, and I work with him. So, but I think to you want to move on. Once you start moving, it's like the pilgrims when they started to come to America, they want to go through America. Once you're walking, you walk, and that's exactly what I do. So I'm German, but I'm quite very happy as well to not to be here and also be in England.
Mm-hmm. Now you're known for your ballads, and I did want to listen to one that was a personal favorite of mine. Let's admit it. It is called "Halt mich," and in English, that's "Hold me." It's a love song.
Träume verbarren uns, Folgen Fantasien, hab mich in dir gefangen, was nicht von mir geschieht, warf mich an deiner Stimme, gib mich zur Ruhe in deinen Arm, halt mich nur ein bisschen, bis ich schlafen kann. Bei dir geboren, setz mein Herz auf dich, jeden Moment genießen, dauer ewiglich. Bei dir ist gut am Leben, Glück im Überfluss, der willenlose Geber, für mich bei dir Trost. Bin verfreut.
Tell me about the lyrics. What did you want to convey?
Well, it's this moment in the, well, kind of the last moment of a day when you really be with your loved one and you want to just get connected and say, just grab me and not shelter me. I think you shelter each other once you hold each other. It's this moment of before you fall, go to sleep in a way. You want to enjoy that last little moment before sleep comes, night comes. And this song is all about this little second where you really feel at ease when life is perfect. You just lie in your bed and just think this is what life is all about.
Now, which do you love more, the ballads or the very rocking songs? It seems like you're at home completely and utterly in either when you perform on stage, but...
No, I write every song. I check the melody of a song, even the rock songs. I always move them, wind them down to a very slow pace and check the melody as a ballad, mainly of all the songs I do. I like the ballads. I'm definitely a ballad person. But on the other hand, if I would have a performance the whole evening and singing ballads, I would fall asleep myself after 20 minutes. So I have to have something that kicks me up as well and keeps me going. So I like the energetic stuff, but I'm definitely a ballad person, yes.
And what's next for you? You're doing this tour, and then what do you see yourself doing?
Well, then we start a new album. I start in October. I start a new album, writing for a new album. Then the movie comes out, and I think the Most Wanted Man comes out in February. And I might write another score, but the next goal is to write a new album.
And you'll keep going. You mentioned earlier you're in your 50s now. Is this a career that you can see yourself, you can keep going? Who are your role models as how to age as a rock star, so to speak?
Well, I've seen Leonard Cohen in Montreux, I think 2 years ago, I must say, and I saw Randy Newman as well in Berlin. I think if you have this decency on stage and you can still see there's this wonderful movie of Buena Vista Social Club of Wim Wenders, where the Cuban musicians, I think one is 96, still smoking a cigar, and I said, music, you can't stop doing that. You know, the beauty, the moment you sit on your piano and start singing, there's this joy coming to you out of nothing, and you don't give that up. You know, it's like having great food or sitting with people and laugh. I think you don't stop that, and if you have the big luck in life that even people come and listen to you, I think that makes it even stronger. But on the other hand, just making music on your own even is a beautiful thing.
So we'll continue to see you.
Yes, I come all the time until you shoot me.
All right, we won't do that. That's Herbert Grönemeyer, German musician. He's currently on a tour of the U.S. promoting his new album called I Walk. Let's go out with the title track, and thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks a lot.
Anybody else? Just try.